Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone in between, this is episode 3 of Tony's Political Ramblings. So today we're going to look at DC statehood and what that means, and for a number of interested parties, not only for DC, but other territories outside of the continental U.S. that might be watching with eager eyes here. So for those of you who may not know, DC, well, actually, the House of Representatives just passed a bill that would call to make the District of Columbia the 51st state of the United States. So that's pretty exciting. I gotta say, it's the first new state that I've seen in my lifetime. Hasn't happened yet, of course. The Senate still needs to approve it, needs to pass it in order for that to happen, which is looking very unlikely, as they need 60 votes to do that, and presently they have a very tentative, maybe not even 50. So the odds of this happening without some major change to the Senate rules are a little unlikely here. But it is an interesting thought process here, and it's an interesting experiment because this is the closest that DC has gotten to being a state. And so they're really only one house of Congress away from getting there. So I thought I would take the opportunity here to sort of look into some of the arguments for and the arguments against DC statehood. And like I said, sort of what this means for Congress moving forward, what this means for the U.S. moving forward, and what this may mean for U.S. territories moving forward. But anyway, arguments for. This one's pretty simple. It's the same argument that we used way back in 1775 and 1776 when we fought a war against Britain. Taxation without representation. So the District of Columbia pays federal taxes. You know, they pay their taxes, and they pay at a higher rate than really a lot of other states, come to think of it. Yet they don't have any senators, and they don't have any representatives in Congress. So essentially, they pay money to the federal government in order to have zero decision-making power outside of, you know, in Congress. So that's not good. that's not particularly fair. So that's the main one. That's something that's been pretty fundamental to the American experience since 1776. Also on top of that, despite the fact that it is a geographically small location, it's got a lot of people living there. There are over 700,000 people who live in Washington, D.C., full-time, you know, who live in the district. And that's a larger population than two other states already, Wyoming and Vermont. And it's quite a lot bigger than Wyoming as well. And it's right up on the heels of Alaska and North Dakota, who are at 737 and 760, respectively. So it's not like there aren't enough people living there. And it's not like they don't pay enough taxes to be in the United States, to be a state. You know, D.C. is a big player in the area. There are a lot of jobs, a lot of people live there. So it certainly justifies them being a state in terms of electoral power. Another piece of it, another argument for, is in response to January 6th, the terrorist attack on the U.S. Capitol. Mayor Bowser, I believe, put in a request for the National Guard to come in to D.C. to protect the Capitol and her district from the right-wing terrorists that came to D.C. on January 6th. But due to D.C.'s not-state status, that has to be approved by the federal government in order for the National Guard to come in. And surprise, surprise, the federal government did not approve that. So if D.C. were a state, they could just call for their own National Guard and they would be there, instead of having to rely on Virginia and Maryland's to come in after something has already happened, or have to get federal approval. And so, again, after the most fundamental attack on our democracy ever, I think it's pretty justifiable to give DC that power to call in their own defense. And so those are two pretty strong arguments for, you know, there are 700,000 people who live in DC who have zero say in Congress, and they pay a lot of taxes, and it gives, and they don't have the ability to really come to their own defense. They have to rely on external parties for that. So those are two arguments among many others for. And I'll look at two arguments against that I've heard. So one of the ones that is particularly funny to me is that you hear a lot of, well, there's a lot of federal buildings there, a lot of federal employees. We don't really want a conflict of interest there in DC, you know. But that doesn't really hold a lot of water. You know, it's not like all of the federal buildings are in DC. There are military bases all over the country. There are airports all over the country. There are government agency headquarters that are not in DC. In fact, many of them have left DC because it's so expensive in order to operate the building there. A lot of the FBI, that's in Quantico, that's in Virginia, the National Institutes of Health, that's in Maryland. You know, you have agency headquarters that have left the district anyway. You have the Pentagon, the U.S. military, Department of Defense headquarters, that's in Arlington, Virginia. You have all sorts of agencies who have left DC and operate in other states, yet they don't influence or have a conflict of interest with those state governments. And so on top of that, I heard first off, that argument is just patently false now, because it's just weak, because there are all sorts of federal offices, headquarters, buildings all over the country, and no one has any problem with it. It's only when it's in DC. And the bill to make DC a state would pretty much like cut out the White House, Congress, and a couple of federal buildings. But the rest of it, the residential areas, the shops, the restaurants, those would be a state, basically, among others. And so the second argument I've heard is from a Republican representative. I want to say it was something along the lines of they're not diverse enough in terms of their output. You know, there's no agricultural center, there's no manufacturing, et cetera, et cetera. And again, it just doesn't hold water. you know what decides a territory to be a state or not should not depend on whether they produce corn. You know, you should look at the people who live there and how many people live there. Is it justifiable, you know, to make that a state? And for the case of DC, it's absolutely yes. Why don't Republicans want it to be a state? Well, DC roughly votes is about like 90% Democrat, 10% Republican. So pretty much every election is going to be a blue landslide victory. You know, if it's not even worth running if you're a Republican in DC. And so that means two more Senate seats to the Democrats and however many representatives to the Democrats. And that will start to sway things left, more left in Congress. And you think, okay, well, that's the reason. There's a lot of talk about race having to play a factor here. DC is about 46% black. I saw that on the Washington Post. Does race have something to do with their arguments? Of course it does. But they're not going to say that. Basically, the people in DC are mostly black and brown people who are going to vote for Democrats. And Republicans don't want that in Congress, because that means they lose their majorities. And it also opens the door for territories like Puerto Rico, Guam, to maybe try and do the same thing. And again, those are going to be areas that are going to lean left and are going to vote blue. And that's going to eat into whatever kind of power that conservatives hold in Congress. So that's the main reason. You know, it's a game of chess here. It's not really so much about, you know, whether people deserve the right to representation or not. It's how can these groups stay in power? That's basically the question at hand here. So That's what that means here. And so going forward, it's going to be interesting to see if DC can get this, if Congress can get this done and DC can become a state, because it will open the door, like I said, for other territories. And honestly, it's one of those where I feel like with DC, with Puerto Rico, and Guam and other territories like that, and the Virgin Islands, if we're not going to make them states, just let them go. Because right now they're colonies. We call them territories, but they're colonies pretty much. They don't have representation in Congress either. So we have to call it for what it is here. And it's a way to keep the playing field level between the parties when it's really not level at all. So that's all I have to say about that one. I think I've rambled enough. So if you, like I said, if you like what you hear, please check out some more of my podcasts, and maybe we can keep discussing these issues in a little more of a deeper, nuanced way.